Welcome to the Quick 10 podcast, brought to you by QuickTrack, focusing on all things FedCon and cyber defense from different perspectives and different personalities, all in 10-ish minutes. Here's your host, Derek White.
All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Quick 10 podcast. I'm your host, Derek White. With me today, I've got Wayne Boleyn, Cyber Compliance Community Contributor. Wayne, thanks for being here, man.
Great to be here. I look forward to it.
Yeah, today we are going to talk about all things SPRS, well, at least as much as we can in the abbreviated time that we do for these podcasts. But very much a topic that I know personally for you is a huge deal, and you present on this a lot. So really wanted to just have you on, have you talk about SPRS here and now kind of stuff, and separate maybe the conversations that these podcasts have covered over the last couple months regarding things like CMMC. But the here, the now, the what's going on, and a lot of people are going to have a lot of questions to navigate. You see this front hand, we see this front hand, but you really have that experience here to walk through it. So floor is kind of yours here, Wayne, just to kind of tell us a little bit about what you do when it comes to this topic and what points you hit on. And then from there, we'll just talk through a few different things that might be relevant for people that are listening.
Yeah, and to be honest, I really have no idea how I became so attached to Spurs and this 70-19-20 rule, because prior to this, I have a background in incident response and things. And then my boss at one point, I think in 2019, asked me to lead a compliance team. And I'm like, ooh, compliance, who wants to do that? And I did that for a while. And just when this rule came out, I just dove in. I have no idea why, but you know, I've become really versed in it. It's probably the only rule I've read front to back, printed, beat up, yellow, highlighted. It's just crazy, but here we are. So kind of become an expert on it. For those that don't know, SPRS stands for Supplier Performance Risk System. And one of the things I cover in the very beginning of the presentation when I speak to it is SPRS has been around for a long time and is much more broad than us Johnny Come Lately cyber self-assessment sort of. There's a lot of other things that supply chain type folks on the government and industry side have been using this for way before we come in. And our little carve out for posting these cyber self-assessments is a very small part of the overall supplier risk part of this government business. So they're very good about providing documentation. If you're a user of this, make use of the documentation. SPRS is accessed through what's called PIE, P-I-E-E, which is a government, basically a platform that hosts a whole lot of different applications the government uses. So you get to PIE, and then SPRS is one of the options. So generally, I start with the very basic root of what drives you to having to post a SPRS self-assessment. And at the base is something we know and love, and that's DFAR 7012. Mm-hmm. DFAR 7012, I'm not going to regurgitate it, but it basically says covered contractor system, adequate security, blah, 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 basically boils down to being compliant with NIST 800-171. However, 18 months or so ago, when I was first building this presentation, I tried to figure out, what is there that actually says you have to be compliant? Because I've always foot stomped 7012 isn't enough. 7012 goes in all the contracts. And there are a lot of people who would tell you, if you have 7012 in your contract, you must be NIST 800-171 compliant. And that is not true. Mm-hmm. And that's when I come across the DoD Procurement Toolbox, FAQ Revision 3. And I think we're going to you're going to post that link in the notes so you can get to it.
For sure. Yep.
Question 6 has an extract. It's basically a get out of jail free card. And it says you only have to implement the security requirements of 800-171 if your contract includes the DFAR clause, and you are provided covered defense information by the DoD, and you are processing, storing, or transmitting that covered defense information on your information system/network. Mm-hmm. So you can have DFAR 7012 in your contract all day long, but if you're not getting any CUI, it does not apply. Now, I've used the phrase, and to much chagrin to certain people in the community, I like to call this a self-deleting clause. And what that means is there's a whole cookie-cutter list of clauses that go in government contracts that we receive. If you don't get CUI, this just kind of self-deletes itself, and you can ignore it. It does not apply. And I'm so glad I found this FAQ question 6 that validates my thinking. Because prior to that, I really had nothing to stand on. So people need to check that out and grab that if it needs to be.
Well, not to mention the 7012 questionnaires and stuff, right? They just get thrown in these boilerplate questions, and that causes a lot of confusion for those that haven't seen CUI and haven't had it detailed in their terms and conditions. And they say, well, then what does everybody do when there's a million contract clauses? They go through it. They reach out for resources and start putting stuff into place. And to your point, yes. Then all of a sudden it's like, oh, maybe I don't need that. Who's telling them that? Yes, you're right. That is a really good Q&A definition of that for sure.
So then operating from that, an assumption that you get CUI and you have the 7012 clause, then in order to actually do the SPERS self-assessment, enter that in SPERS, you need to have the 7019 and 7020, which came out together. And I have a heck of a time keeping those straight as far as which one requires you to make yourself available for DMCAC assessments and all that stuff versus what makes you load the score into SPERS. But everybody can read 7019 and 7020. Generally, they're put out together. And then those clauses require you to then perform that self-assessment posted. And I have a few myths later that I'll kind of touch on that, so I won't get ahead of myself.
Yeah, you're right. For those that this is new to, 7019, 7020, we've been around since way before that. So if it was a big shift to all of a sudden say, hey, you're going to enter this score into a system that the government manages and be available for when they say we want to show up, which unfortunately had to, I guess, kind of be labeled as a clause, because I guess technically some people could have said, nah, we're not going to do that. So it's an accountability push on our side. That's how I always kind of explain it is, I mean, if you are required to do these things because you handle that type of data, then you should be ready for that and you should be doing this stuff. And if there's not a mechanism for finding out if that's true or not, or at least hold somebody's feet to the fire to make sure that it's accurate, then we know how that looks. That's how it used to be.
Yeah. And I'm going to make a statement with no definitive evidence whatsoever, but my thinking is these two clauses were created to be a bridge between 7012 and 7021 CMMC, because you know, when they were pitching CMMC, they said CMMC is driven because people were signing 7012 and just ignoring it. Mm-hmm. Where 70, you know, the SPERS requirement to do the self-assessment and load it is a step higher than 7012, where you just sign the contract and that says you're compliant by a simple signature, versus 7021, which is a third-party assessment. This is kind of a bridge in the middle. And I'm being really big on conspiracy theories. It also adds additional evidence for a False Claims Act. Because, you know, just signing a 7012, that's kind of weak if you want to prosecute a company for false claims. If you have a self-assessment and you enter the score in a government database, that's a little more ammunition to use for a False Claims Act.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then go ahead. Yep.
The self-assessment is based on the DOTAM, the DOD assessment methodology. Probably should include that link too.
I mean, for sure. Yep.
I want to assume everybody knows where that is, but the DOD assessment methodology, you know, it has a background purpose. It talks a lot of information about what's behind the methodology. Then it has a step-by-step for each control and the score, and that's the calculus you use to perform the self-assessment and come up with that score. However, I foot stomp this big time. If you're not using NIST 800-171 alpha to help with that, you could end up with a big swing and a miss, because the scoring matrix, or whatever you want to call it, is very weak on content. It basically names the control and then tells you what score you get or how much you would lose if you didn't implement that. And then I have an assessment guidance from that that I talk about and show people that shows the level of detail you can get when you're using 171.8 to help you. And then it has typically has discussions in there. So if you're somebody trying to do it yourself without IT support and you're really kind of lost, that narrative in that 171.8 may be very helpful in getting where you need to be.
Yeah, for sure. And obviously, we should probably disclaim too that everything that we're talking about is personal opinion here, not
organization's
opinion. So, yeah, no, but yes, that's
an expert on my opinion, but that's all the expertise I'm going to tell you.
That's right. Yes, it's like that's how you know sporting fans should be thinking about their teams and stuff too.
So that's all I'm going to say about the actual self-assessment process, because that's not what I think is the most important part of my presentation. And that is, you can have the best process for self-assessing, the best self-assessment score in the world, but if you don't do and address the logistics of Spurs and its relationship with SAM.gov, you're never going to get that in there. And what that is for those not familiar, SAM.gov is the government database where if you are a new company, and you want to get a cage code, which is necessary to do contracting work with the DoD. Each contract will have a cage code in it. And everything about assessments, cyber assessments, whether it's a DIBCAC or a Spurs self-assessment, revolves around that cage code. That cage code starts in SAM.gov. And that's where you enter financial information, tax information, you identify contracts, POCs, electronic business, POCs, all that. And that is a hot mess at times. So there are two key fields in there that are critical to get the cage code that your company or codes that your company is identified as over to the Spurs database. There's a immediate owner and a highest level owner field. And if those fields are not populated, your cage code will never populate over to Spurs. And you can never get it in your hierarchy and you can never make an entry. So it's critical that you have somebody identified to keep that up to date. And you need to keep it up to date on a regular basis because in about the last 18 months, the government's made it a lot more difficult to make modifications to SAM.gov. And again, another unfounded thought on why that's true, it feels like maybe there were some of our adversaries making shell companies and doing some nefarious activity. And they just decided, rightfully so, that they need to make it a little more rigid and difficult to make changes to those records in there because of how many things cascade down and are directly related to that. Mm-hmm. So step one is you got to be on top of your SAM.gov cage registration presence and keep that current.
Yeah, and this is why we want everyone to be more foundational. Because it's just got to be from the top down in organization. That's all organizational stuff. That's all things that are important anyway. Let's get to the myth side. Some of the things that
I got one more.
Okay.
List of best practices that I like to tell people about.
Yeah, please do.
One of those is controlling access to Spurs, because those scores that are in Spurs are attestation from your company, and the DIBCAC can get in there and poke around and say, you know, this score sounds a little high or something. Maybe we need to go check out company X. You need to be really careful about maintaining access. Now, this is more applicable to medium and large organizations that have a lot of cage codes, a lot of people involved, than a small company that may have, you know, a handful of cage codes and a single individual. But I like to maintain control to the minimum amount of people possible. Consider building an offline database with the information from Spurs. It's easy to export, put it in a Tableau database, then allow your company, contracting, legal, cyber people, if they want to know what your score is for any given cage code, to use that offline database and look that up and just keep the fingers out of the kitchen in the master database so that you won't run into problems. You need to carefully document the score and select the appropriate individual to enter the score And then most importantly, you need to create a process for data review that ensures accuracy and currency of that entry. And that process needs to have senior level leadership knowledgeable of that and aware what that score is given the implications of a false score. But we'll jump ahead now to...
Yeah. I know a couple of things
that you're going to say here. Misinformation. Some of these are a little bit dated because they're from 18 months ago, and mm-hmm. you know, people become more familiar with Spurs and everything. But you know, when I first, this is the kind of information that caused me to create this in the first place, because there was just so much misinformation floating around out there. And at the time, one of the big myths was you're required to have a Spurs score now. When it first came out, there were people shrieking to the top of the mountain that you got to go get your Spurs score done and entered in the database right now. Well, no, you don't. You didn't have to until you got the clause in a contract.
Which is 17, 19, and 20.
Yeah.
Yep.
So it would have been, it's good to have it calculated and ready to go, but do you really want to enter it in there before it's required? I say not. There's nothing to gain except exposing yourself. So my guidance was you wait until it's required by contract. Spurs score is required even if you have zero CUI. I think we covered that pretty well in the beginning. Mm-hmm. That's not true, although there were people telling me if you got 70-12, you got to have a Spurs score. No. Mm-hmm. There's a failing Spurs score. Not true. The rule, the spirit of the rule says you have to have a score. Doesn't matter what it is. Mm-hmm. To the best of our knowledge, the contracting officers are not using that score as a competitive aspect of evaluating contract bids. Hopefully that's true and there's no unknown bias or anything, but you know, the only failing score is no score. Early on, there was a lot of kerfuffle around, you have to load your SSP and POAMs along with your Spurs score. Well, no, you don't. There was no capability to even do that. So that was never possible. I even saw an article that said you had to have an ECA or CAC card to access PI and then get into Spurs. While that's a capability, that's not a requirement. And then there's this concept that I saw people saying you must have a Spurs score to do any work with the DoD, which is not correct. We covered that back when you said you had to have CUI for that clause to apply. Another one, good one is, does your company have a Spurs score loaded? Well, I have a whole lot of Spurs scores loaded. You need to specify what cage code it's associated with, because all Spurs scores got to be associated with cage code. And then the final one was, somebody was really confused. Your ExoStar score is not your Spurs score, and that's not going to work. So the two are not the same. And a biggie that I speak to as a standalone, there are people who say, if you have no SSP, it's like an immediate negative 200 change. Not true. If you look at 3.12.4 in the DoD assessment methodology, it clearly states, if you have no SSP, you cannot do an assessment, full stop, you do not have a score. Because a maximum negative score would still meet the DFAR's requirement, and you could be awarded the contract, where no score prevents a contract award. Mm-hmm. So no SSP, no score, do not pass go. Mm-hmm. Simple as that. Mm-hmm. And then just breaking this week, for people who are new to Spurs, version 4.0 came out on Monday morning, has some additional capabilities, refined interfaces for searching and the entry of the scores and so on. It's just a little smoother. So
yeah,
that in a nutshell are my foot stompers.
No, that's big time stuff. And just, you know, we're in the middle of October, so it's time of this recording. So if you're watching this down the road, then that 4.0 did come out in the early part of October. So thanks for jumping through that. I just want to recap then a couple of those big foot stomps. So if you don't have 70-19, 70-20, as a requirement in your contracts, then you don't need a Spurs score.
And for the most part, similar to 70-12, though, it's going to be cookie cutter.
That's right.
The big thing that's going to keep you from having to do it is lack of CUI.
Yes, that's my next point. Yep.
And that's And that get out of jail free card is in that question six of that FAQ that you will provide folks with.
And the CUI versus not CUI, and how do I find that out, is not always black and white, as we know. So there are steps you can take to, I guess we'll call it, ask up if you can go through your contract conditions. Yep.
Exactly.
Yep.
That can be difficult, but you really need to nail down with who's asserting the contract whether or not they're CUI. Because to be honest, if you don't know whether or not they're CUI and you don't know what it is, how can you protect it? You do, in fact, so that's critical.
And the default maneuver that most people do is then just try to apply these requirements to everything so they can say that they're ready for when they do have it. And then your cost, your management, all these things that go on when you do have that third party assessment of some sort, regardless of where it comes from, still comes back down to the data that you handle and what touches it, all that kind of stuff. So thank you for that. And I will say the system security plan, NIST Standard 171A, we've referenced that in previous episodes. It will continue to come up. We're still having conversations with people who have focused on the 110 controls. So this is why we have these conversations. This is why you want to hear it from the firsthand experience of people who've been doing this for a long time. You have to know that stuff before you can make decisions.
I see folks mentioning if you got a consultant out there that's going to help you become compliant, the question you need to ask every consultant is how familiar you are you with NIST 800-171A? And for those that say, what's that? You run away screaming.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I've had conversations this week with companies who've been working with respectable companies since 2018. And they're just starting to talk about that stuff. And I said, well, what have you, all the things you just covered were the conversations we were having as well. What did you enter for score? Are you sure that's in there? And what were you basing that off of? And what's your documentation look like? And, that's why we're just trying to help and get people on the right page. And I can't echo enough the system security plan details and having that versus just going and popping in a score. There's a lot of bad advice out there. And you hit that really, really hard, which I appreciate. It's just going through a score and worry about it later. It's like, that's not going to end very well. No, it will not end well. So don't do that. Awesome. Well, thanks, Wayne. I know we went a little bit longer than normal, but that was good. The references, everything that you've talked about, if you're watching on YouTube, you'll see some of this stuff pop up on the screen. But if not, you're listening on your favorite podcast platform, you can check out the reference links in other areas that we're sending people to down there. And as always, subscribe, follow, do all that stuff. We'll have you on again in the future because things will look different in 12 months from now. We'll see where things are at. We'll see how that goes. And
the next thing up is CMMC SPRS.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that we didn't need to talk about today because we don't want to be here for a week. But yes, those are going to be the fun nuggets that we'll get into later. And again, just really appreciate you coming on, spending some time. It's a crazy Friday here for a lot of people involved in this ecosystem and stuff. So thank you, Wayne. And we'll catch you next time. And I think we'll maybe spend even a little bit more time than we did today on the next topic.
Always happy to help. Thank you.
All right, there. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode. And make sure to subscribe to the Quick 10 Podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And check us out on YouTube as well. For more information about QuickTrack, visit our website at www.quicktrack.com. That's CUICKTRAC.com.